Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hartog. Chris, how are you doing?
Afternoon, Nick, Sarah, doing well, thank you. Forward to another week and what we have to unpack today.
Indeed, indeed. And of course, we're also joined today by Sarah Gon. Sarah, how are you doing?
Well, thank you. Well, thank you. I see the financial issues hitting our way.
Indeed, there are. Now, I must apologize before we begin. I had a nosebleed just before the show. Hopefully, it doesn't interrupt me. But if I sound funny or if on video, I'm suddenly clutching tissues to my face, it's because of that.
You sound
But
funny anyway, so
as
you're fine.
ha ha ha. But as funny as I may sound, and as silly as I may sound, clutching tissues to my face, I will say that Panyazilo Sufi has not been looking great recently. This is a great piece of reporting written by Alex Patrick. I think it was in News 24. And it talks about a recent turnaround summit that was hosted by the Gauteng government, at which Panyazilo Sufi was the sort of opening and closing speaker. So this was very much the Lesufi show. And I just want to read bits of this thing because it's a great piece of reporting. It just gives you the feeling of what it's like to be there. And having gone to similar sort of local government conferences, I resonate with this so powerfully. I'm just going to read lots of it. By the time Premier Panyazilo Sufi took to the stage at the start of the Gauteng local government turnaround summit, the sweltering conference hall and an abundant breakfast had lulled many of the leaders into sleep. Starting on Wednesday, the two-day summit was called to address critical challenges in local government under the theme, quote, "Building smart and resilient municipalities of the future." The summit worked to strengthen the district development model, a model in which local, provincial, and national governments work together to ensure the health of municipalities. It was held at the Misty Hills Country Hotel in Mulder's Drift and hosted political leaders from local, provincial, and national departments, as well as industry leaders, stakeholders such as Rand Water, Josie My Josie, and Gauteng City Region Observatory. The thing was meant to start at 9 o'clock, but the premier only gave his opening address at 11, which perhaps was a sign for things to come. Lesufi sprouted off on all of his great ideas to fix the country and the state of its municipalities, including such bizarre ones as demanding that the banks must pay for the rates and taxes if customers don't, so if the residents don't, by saying, you know, it's the banks that actually own these houses when they're bought with a bond, and so they must be charged for municipal rates when the residents don't pay, which is such a terrible idea. It's kind of difficult to know where to begin with that one. Some of the attendees, Alex Patrick writes, were asleep as this happened. But the clapping wasn't rousing enough to wake a woman sleeping in the front row of extra chairs at the side of the stage. As spare chairs did not have desks in front, there was nothing to catch the woman's phone when it slipped out of her loosening grip, clattering to the floor and waking her up. There were a number of speakers. A person from the Deputy Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs gave a speech, basically saying that the wasteful and fruitless expenditure from municipalities amounts to billions and billions of rands. The decision to correct all these matters lies with mayors and office bearers of municipalities. We need to decide to correct these failings by the time we leave here. So very quickly, it seems that the whole thing sort of deflated with everyone not taking it that seriously. Patrick writes, "It was clear that despite the summit's importance, many municipalities had sent their more junior staff. The top leaders who did go spent the night at the resort and the spa. Thursday was touted as an important part of the summit, as it would host the mayors of the municipalities who would present their turnaround plans. However, each mayor only had 2 minutes to do so." Which, when you're talking about municipalities that have literally millions of residents, this is not really a great idea. Only three mayors arrived: the new mayor of Tshwane, Ekurhuleni's mayor, and Midvale's mayor. You know, one opposition, one DA mayor there. And then the one thing that was very full, while many of the lecture halls seemed to be empty, was the carnival restaurant, which was paid for, where everyone went and filled up on food. Yeah, basically, Lesufi then eventually at the end had to give the closing remarks. He closed with his future vision for the province, which included electric vehicles, residents paying the municipalities to charge them, buildings with extra toilets for women so they wouldn't have to stand in long queues, and using e-toll gantries as speed traps instead of paying metro cops to, quote, hide behind trees. He said that CBDs needed to be defended, quote, so that there are no pickpockets and people who steal our women's beautiful hair. And he addressed the Joburg leadership, I hope they are still here. But they weren't. He also addressed the Ekurhuleni leaders, you can't survive on cash loans and cell phone contracts when you are near the airport. However, he grew increasingly frustrated because the hall was emptier and emptier as he was giving his closing remarks. And he then insisted that those who remained were the future of the province. And he left the hall to a sort of smattering of applause. And the whole thing just gives you this portrait of a political leader who has no ideas, who's full of pomp and circumstance, but has just got absolutely nothing to solve the very major crises that are hitting the municipalities across Gauteng. Sarah, what do you make of this thing?
It's like a bad sitcom. You know, it's like an episode. It's sad, it's funny, and it's very, very worrying. And it's worrying because he obviously doesn't know what he's talking about. They don't have to have a gathering like this. And whatever he was full of was probably just lunch, him and most of his colleagues. I mean, it just appalled that everyone knows what is wrong with the municipalities. The people who are in charge, like him, should have been sitting with other people at higher levels, discussed it, decided on a plan, and told the municipalities what to do. I'm putting it a bit simply, but it really amounts to that. I mean, these shindigs are... You know, how about arriving and not having breakfast on the first day? How about having coffee and a cook sister? But, you know, things never operate like that. These are not serious people. They're not serious people because they don't know what needs to be done, let alone how it has to be done. It's not going to be done. The people who are there, if they're getting it done, they're doing it because they're good enough and they're very few of them. And if they're not doing it, they're not going to do it. It doesn't matter how many lunches and breakfasts were paid for by the taxpayer. It's absolutely criminal. But it does speak to the fact that the ANC leadership certainly does not have what it takes to get us out of the morass we're in. And this is just the worst thing about this is it's just symptomatic of something we already know.
Exactly, and it's even worse to consider that Lesufi may very well be in the running for ANC leader. Now, we don't know whether he actually is or whether he's going to fall in behind one of the other candidates, but his name is being mentioned. And you just realize the sort of absolute lack of talent, that this is just, you know, it's difficult to think of this as anything other than kind of a portrait and patheticness of there's no connection to reality here. I mean, the vision for the future is everyone with electric cars. I mean, there are parts of Joburg where they have to essentially implement their own version of load shedding called load reduction. Because of the grid not being able to take it in Joburg. There's municipalities all over the province that are running out of water. Everyone all over is suffering with that. The inner cities of every single one of these municipalities is in huge trouble, particularly Johannesburg. And there's just no sort of, you know, the CBDs need to be defended. Well, that's not a plan. This isn't serious. This is all just posturing. It's just so shallow. And I just, it's kind of amazing, I think, at how revealing it is that Lesufi is all hot air and absolutely no substance. Chris, what do you make of this?
Yeah, this, should anyone have been surprised that the ANC dropped to, 34.5% in Gauteng in this year's elections from just above 50% the previous election cycle, and the DA at 27%, 28%. This is a good illustration. In fact, in reality, which undercuts all the bluster and all the hot air, that shows where the sort of state of thinking, of problem solving, if we want to call it that, is at this point in time in the office of the Premier. Regarding the sort of wider ANC race in 2027, that elective conference, maybe a pivot for Lesufi would not to be contest for president, but to be an individual around whom those who are opposed to the idea of the ANC being in the GNU, they coalesce, and he plays a more behind-the-scenes role, some sort of
senior organizer or something in that regard, not necessarily as an orator or a figurehead or a face of a next person to succeed Ramaphosa. So I don't know if there will be that realization, but you know, maybe there's a questions to be asked for him in that regard. And then also just on the state of wider governance in Gauteng and the metros, especially in Joburg, Ekurhuleni, and Tshwane, when you don't realize the reality on the ground for your citizens, the issues that they deal with, service delivery, breakdowns, all that sort of stuff, and you're in a bit of an ivory tower or in a sort of location where those around you also don't give you the necessary criticism or feedback or ways for you to take it on board and to improve, that sort of the vicious cycle reinforces on itself the whole time and just worsens and spirals out of control. So you won't then see the necessary decisions to fix the issues in the country, in Gauteng, in the metros. It just sort of continues on that downward path.
You know, the interesting thing about municipal government is that in some ways it's kind of less ideological, the solutions, right? A lot of the solutions to the problems are not necessarily, you know, are you going to centralize or decentralize, or, you know, how big a role is the state going to play, things like that, or what are the taxes? You know, those are powers that are mostly at national government. It's not with the municipalities. So a lot of it comes down to the basics of management, spending your money properly, you know, dealing with staff correctly, that sort of thing. There are ideological issues, but they're not as big. And I think this is really where you see the kind of hollowness that the ANC, particularly in Gauteng, seems to have, which is just that it's running these huge, important municipalities, and there's just sort of no idea to do anything except stuff that kind of looks good on paper, like electric car charging stations. I mean, we are so far. We are so far from being able to implement that. I mean, never mind the fact that there really aren't that many electric charging stations. And then, you know, Lesufi has the sort of gall to go around and talking about how he's a champion for the poor. I mean, this is not a priority of the poor, is electric car charging stations. Not even the middle class really cares about those. I mean, you know, this is all stuff that you could be looking at if the city was succeeding in its most basic functions. But so often we see this in municipal governance is big, grand, flashy projects where, you know, you have way overspending on something that's kind of simple. You have corrupt cadres scraping off extra money. I mean, my favorite example of this was back in the sort of mid-2010s. I went to visit Port St. John's. And while I was there, you know, this is a municipality that's one of the worst run in the country. Road has turned to dust through the middle of the town. There's like tires and cows on the beach. It's just the water is undrinkable. There's all sorts of problems there. But there was this amazing pavement and streetlights down one section of the road, which was pristine and immaculate and looked new and was all like kind of fancy design. And I was sort of like, this is obviously misspending of municipal money, that like there were a bunch of streetlights, and it wasn't a very long section too. It was like a sort of 50 meter section of road that was just amazing. And I think that is kind of symbolic of just how so many municipalities in the country spend their money. And Lesufi is just echoing all of those terrible sentiments in his summit here. Sara, any final thoughts on this? I mean, do we think Lesufi is going to actually be able to be a major force in the ANC going forward, or is his car running out of petrol here?
I think with any luck, the ANC in general, you know, will either sink below whatever percentages it has come the come 2026, because it's a failure to understand that the key to city administration is administration. It's not exotic. It doesn't look good. Achieving something for it would look good on a CV, but these are people who know nothing about the hard slog and the tedious work that has to be done to get things to run properly. And the Sufi, to me, I mean, he's the guy of the big ideas, you know, the race in schools, changing language policies at schools, etc., from his days in education. It is singularly hugely embarrassing. And I think in response to comment, while the DA stays in the GNU, I think they stay in. It doesn't matter if the ANC takes credit for what they've done. But the problem is, to date, the only people who've apparently done anything, everyone knows, has been, perhaps partly from, except someone like our police minister, is other DA ministers. So we just get, we obviously, the ANC is just not getting to turn that ideological corner that understands that ideology is pretty meaningless if administration is useless.
Right, exactly. As our colleague Terence Corrigan always stresses, you know, you can have all this discussion about the capable state and, you know, state-led development of the economy, but if you don't have a state capable of doing the most basic tasks, this is a complete fantasy. You need to actually, you know, the questions of ideology don't even come into it, because you need to actually do step one, which is have a state that works. Yeah. Speaking of having a state that works, let's talk about our next topic, and this is Claire Bisker, who has written a piece titled "The Iceberg Has Emerged," and the subtitle is "The Treasury's Policy of Practicing Fiscal Consolidation While Praying for Growth is Running Out of Road." This is, I think, in BizLive. And basically, she kind of describes the sort of the way that that the country's fiscus has been run, which is this kind of trying to hold off on too much spending and just projecting that a few years down the line, no, there will be economic growth, and that'll get us out of the hole that we're in, the financial hole that we're in. But as there's been so little change in policy, there's been a growing distrust in the markets of the ANC's ability to change direction, at least until the GNU, when sentiment kind of turned around. You've gotten this kind of this you know, our growth has just limped along, you know, 1%, less than 1%, just an economy that's kind of, you know, in a coma. And this has been going on since at least sort of about 2010-ish, around about there, that we've been stuck in this cycle. We've had, you know, I think the best growth we've had since 2010 is, what, 3% growth or something like that. And most of the time it's been much lower. And we're really now beginning to see the consequences of this. Now, these consequences of running out of money would have hit actually a few years earlier, but then there was this sudden surprise windfall, I think, during the chaos caused by COVID and the lockdowns, which meant that government got a much bigger tax revenue intake than they were expecting in sort of 2020, 2021. But that only bought us maybe a year or two, and we're now kind of beginning to see the credit crunch. The Department of Basic Education estimates, this is in the piece, that it will have a cumulative budget shortfall of 76 billion rand over the next 3 years, given the cost of providing adequate services. And that's just one department. That's one of the biggest ones. We've already seen the Western Cape says that it's having to cut teaching posts precisely because national government is not able to give them the money they need to pay teachers, you know, to do the most basic things in education. So we really are heading kind of for a fiscal crisis point, one that I think has taken a bit longer to get here than I would have thought a few years ago. But here it is. Michael Sachs, who's from Fitz University, he's a professor at Fitz University, said, "These things have been building for years, but now the iceberg of the past 15 years has emerged above the water. This time it could be different because of all the good GNU-related sentiment. If by the next medium-term budget policy statement there is some indication of growth picking up to 2-3%, you could start to ease the fiscal constraints. But if not, you've really had it going into the political cycle. This really is the last chance saloon." So, Chris, I think this really highlights how important it is that the GNU does achieve some sort of reform, because otherwise there ain't going to be no money left to fix things.
I think that's the case at this point in time. There isn't money left to fix things. The governor of the Reserve Bank, Letsetja Kanyako, said last week, getting investor and business confidence up is like free stimulus. So it's a bit of a shot in the arm, but it doesn't fix substantive deep issue. So we've got this positive sentiment after the formation of the GNU, markets are more positive, the rand is something like 3% strong against the dollar from the beginning of the year. So I don't want to discount positive sentiment, but it only carries you so far without the necessary structural reforms. And by that we don't mean
it's also getting flighty, right? Like, yes, sentiment could disappear tomorrow.
Yeah, unless you back it up, which will sustain it going forward. And, you know, getting the trains to run on time isn't substantive deep reform, policy or legislative wise. You need to get labor reforms, things of that ilk going. So I think in the medium-term budget policy statement, it'll be a balance between these different constraints. You'll have calls for spending, basic income grant, NHI, versus more conservative and middle-of-the-road players within Treasury who have tried to maintain a fiscal line, tried to bring debt to GDP down to 75%, where it's been at 78% in the last few years. You might get some shifting in terms of the public sector wage bill. Maybe you'll see some continued guarantee for Transnet, for example, which at the moment has a 47 billion rand guarantee from Treasury, not a bailout. Sometimes these things are more technical than anything else. But yeah, I think this is the culmination of years of more spending, the state growing in terms of the proportion of tax revenue it collects, but not effective spending. So not in terms of capital infrastructure, investment in, you know, proper industries like manufacturing, that sort of stuff, and actually just spending more spending on consumption. And what I mean by consumption is salaries in the public sector. And it's all coming down to force more pressure on a smaller tax base than has been the case before. And of course, your risk there is if you drive businesses and high net worth individuals away, your tax revenue just evaporates. We might see things like maybe an increase in sin taxes. That's an easy way to ratchet up some pain. But in terms of VAT increases, tax increases for individual taxpayers, I don't know if we'll see that in the mini budget. You'll probably see it in the main budget next year.
So Sarah, one of the big political questions here is, you know, is the GNU going to be able to make some of the sort of demands, the compromises it needs to actually fix some of these problems? Is the ANC actually going to give up some of its sacred cows? And, you know, the writer R.W. Johnson wrote this book a couple of years ago called How Long Will South Africa Last, I think was what it was. And it was about basically that running out of money would leave the country no sort of option but to reform in a positive direction that actually began growing the economy again. Now, you know, considering we're in a slightly different environment than when that book was written, that book was written, you know, when the ANC was still firmly sort of dominant and in power, and it wasn't clear that it was going to lose power anytime soon. Do you think that's a possibility? If the money runs out, will the ANC be forced, kind of kicking and screaming, to actually implement some of these changes?
I think given how riven the ANC still seems to be and how much time Ramaphosa seems to spend in trying to get the more, shall we say, MK-type elements of the ANC into line, who want things as they always were, I'm not sure. I mean, I think this could have been the chance for Ramaphosa to really grab the reins and pretty much ride roughshod over these people, because it's a kind of now or never. You've got the GNU, you've got ministers from other parties, and it has led to the positive sentiment that Chris talked about, that we can't keep, you know, relying on it. I'm not convinced that another, you know, a second Cyril Ramaphosa term will achieve that. And it was in an indirect way, it was indicated in his fulsome praise for Russia and Vladimir Putin, saying, you know, Russia supported us since the dark days of our struggle. Well, you know, countries don't support you. Governments do or don't support you. And a Soviet government is not Putin's government, and the circumstances are not the same. So if you're still wedded to that idea that a country supported you, and therefore you're going to persist in the economic model that that country mistakenly followed and collapsed over, I'm not sure. If we need reformers, and I'm not entirely convinced that the reform element is either strong enough or big enough or both to make the necessary changes. And of course, that would be catastrophic for the ANC, because, you know, there's been quite a fair amount of sentiment. I mean, by all accounts, for example, the Germans, from what I hear from sources, are sort of dying to come into South Africa in many respects. But, you know, because they see the slowdown in China, they see the slowdown in America from investment point of view. So South Africa should be capitalizing on that, but they have to be much braver and much more reformist, I think, to actually make the difference. And I'm not sure if they can. Maybe the best thing we can hope for is they don't become the largest party any of the next set of elections. So, but, you know, God help us, which party will.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting sort of question is what the, you know, how the politics is going to look moving forward, because you've got, we're at this sort of interesting place where none of the parties seems like it's in an excellent position. Once again, the ANC continues to be driven by infighting and chaos. It's recovered a bit in the polls. The SRF polling suggests that it's gone up a little bit since the formation of the GNU. And, you know, the DA has also grown a little bit, but not like by enough to sort of change the dynamic of things. But then you've also got MK and the EFF seem to kind of be stalling out. But a lot of the small parties are sort of struggling. So no one at the moment really seems to be having a lot of momentum in the political system. But Chris, any final thoughts on this one before we move on?
Just to mention, since 2012, GDP growth has averaged 0.8%. So that's the context in which South Africa finds itself. And next year, for example, the Bureau for Economic Research projects 3.3% GDP growth. Now, I would love that. I'm quite skeptical. The IMF, on the other hand, forecasts 1.5%. If it is 1.5%, that's the 12th consecutive year in which the population has grown more than the economy, which means GDP per capita has shrunk. So you don't get out of that long-term cycle, that high debt, low growth trap, by just spending on more ineffective government plans and projects and things. Unfortunately, it's going to take a lot of political will and the difficult decisions for the better of the country, and maybe for the GNU, well, parties, I should, not all of them, but for the ANC specifically. If you don't make those difficult decisions now, you just add more oxygen to those parties and players who don't play on the same terms in terms of the constitution, the rule of law, the courts, free media, free press. You just add more space for them and their arguments to feed into frustrations on the part of citizens who have become poorer over time, whose potential, yes, and prospects have been brought down by consecutive ANC administrations.
It is worth pointing out, because there's often this kind of cynical view that you get, particularly from people who are not fans of the ANC, that, you know, this doesn't really matter. The ANC still gets votes, that their election performance has nothing to do with how well they do in government, that kind of thing. It's not really true. If you look at our sort of trajectory of our GDP growth and the ANC's governance, when the ANC was most successful growing the economy and creating an environment that made jobs, sort of in the sort of 2004 to 2008 era, that's also when the ANC got almost 70% of the vote. Nowadays, you know, they're down at 40%. So, you know, our democratic system may not be perfect by any means, but it does actually work. And this is why the ANC really, for its own self-interest, needs to take on board some of the things we're saying. Because if they don't, they are going to be eaten by a variety of other parties. Some of their vote will go to MK. Some will go to the DA. Some will go to some new party that will probably pop up. It really is crisis, not just for the country, but for them as well. Okay, let's talk about our last story very briefly. And this is another sort of angle on the succession disputes within the ANC, because, of course, Cyril seems to be kind of, yeah, this seems to be his last rodeo. He's not going to be running the show for too much longer. I think the ANC's elective conference is in 2026, if I'm remembering that correctly. But anyway, it looks like Paul Mashatile, the deputy president, is kind of putting his toe in the water for running for president, but in this kind of annoying way that you see all the time in ANC politics of saying, oh, well, I'm not, you know, I if the branches want me, I'll be the leader, which is always a sign that someone is running for leadership of the ANC. He said, when being interviewed by the Sunday Times, as leaders of the ANC, not only me, I think we should always avail ourselves to serve the movement when asked to do so. I don't think we should stand on top of the roofs and say, I'm available. Let's wait for the members to ask us. And should they, my own view is that we should make ourselves available for whatever task they give you. So it's not pick and choose. If members don't ask you to serve in a particular position, they probably have reasons not to, but maybe they want you to serve in another capacity. He's considered by many to be the front runner to succeed Ramaphosa. However, there are a number of other contenders.
Uh, In Nick's absence, I would say maybe they don't want you to serve at all, not in other capacities or anything else for that matter. And if we ended up with nothing but the an option of an ANC president or an ANC president next time, as I said before the show, I think, you know, if the US can have Donald Trump, we can have Fikile Mbalula. No, he's currently not appearing to be the dimmest light bulb in the ceiling or whatever the right term is. It looks like.
Not sure. Nick is on his own vision quest at the moment.
Am I back? Am I back with everyone?
You are back.
Okay, wonderful. So I think increasingly it is looking like a bit between Paul Mashatile and Fikile Mbalula. And I must say, to my shock, I'm kind of on board with the Fikile Mbalula train here. Fikile Mbalula has said a lot of, I thought, quite wise things recently. Notably his, we can't strut around like peacocks pretending like we won the election comments. And also his comment that the ANC was not a socialist party. Now, whether that's true or not is not important. What's important is that he seems to be pushing the party in that direction. I think this is, you know, if the ANC picks Lesufi or Mashatile, it's going to be more of the same. And if the ANC picks someone like Fikile Mbalula, maybe this is a chance at reform. I don't know. Chris, final thoughts.
The question is also which particular person might be easier for different interest groups or factions to control or to on whom to project their levels of influence or desire in terms of policy or the direction of the party, et cetera, et cetera. So that could also form part of the calculation, not necessarily the best person for the ANC to grow its vote share to 70%, but just while the party continues to decline, how can you protect your own interests within that? So that could also be that. That's the, I guess, the very short-termist possibility.
No, exactly. Okay. Well, sorry for the bit of the technical issue at the end there. But anyway, thank you very much for watching. We shall be back tomorrow with the Daily Frame Wrap. I hope you all found the show interesting today. And I hope that everyone in Gauteng is enjoying the warm weather, despite all of the many municipal challenges we are having at the moment. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful